Point, Milwaukee. You can also meet Kathleen Dunn, Rob Ferret, Chuck Quirenbach, and Veronica Rickert. Details at WPR.org/WeLoveOurListeners.
Support comes from Gateway Technical College. Learn accounting when you want, where you want, and when you can. Gateway Technical College offers online, on-demand, two-year accounting degrees, 24/7, all year round. Visit gtc.edu.
You're listening to Technology Matters, a show for the casual computer and gadget user that airs the second Saturday of every month. It's hosted by Gateway IT instructor Christine Lazaro and Gateway IT graduate Dave Snedeker.
Good morning, everyone. It's Chris, and today's show is going to be an eclectic mix of topics, a little on devices and a little on software. It all stems from my needing to solve a couple of different issues, as well as wanting to explore some new tools that I discovered recently. So here we go. So first off, school ended a couple of weeks ago, end of April, and I've been at home and in the house a lot more than normal. I was kind of surprised, and let me tell you, a little bit annoyed with the number of spam calls that we get in a given day. Just kind of shocked me. Yes, in our house, we are one of the households left that still has a house phone. I hesitate to say landline, as technically, at least in my book, a landline refers to what we used to call a POTS line, or a plain old telephone service. And most of the people today that still have house phones, they're using VoIP, or voice over IP, where the phone service is provided over the internet. But today, typically, landline is used to, you know, refer to any type of house phone. I did try to do some quick research to find some numbers of voice usage over POTS usage. Couldn't find any real hard data. Everything kept coming up with marijuana use, go figure. And some of that comes from how phone calls are handled these days once the phone company gets hold of your call. So you might have a regular hardwire POTS line coming into your house, but again, once it, you know, leaves your house and the phone company gets it, it may quickly become a VoIP call, meaning it's traveling over the internet. And the days of phone calls traveling 100% over the wire are pretty much gone. I guess the song Wichita Lineman doesn't really work anymore, although there still are plenty of, you know, telephone lines out there. But it's a mixture, you know, depending on the infrastructure. Anyway, the use of house phones these days is about 50-50, meaning about 50% of the households in the U.S. still have a house phone. But I'm digressing, which I've been known to do. Back to spam calls or robocalls and my hunt to figure out a way to get rid of this annoyance, trying to find some way to handle it a little bit better. So when it comes to blocking calls or call blocking, there's actually a number of tools that are available for us to use. I was surprised about the number. The first one, the maybe kind of the easiest, may come from your carrier or provider, whoever that might be, and that even includes cell phones. Most of the providers give you the ability to block calls using options available on their website when you log into your account. For example, I have a VoIP, voice over IP line from AT&T UVerse, and using that feature on their website, I can block up to 20 specific numbers. There's also an option to block anonymous calls, those calls that don't have caller ID, so that adds to that 20 specific numbers. I hesitated to use that option as we have a number of friends who use cell phones and they haven't set up their caller ID, and so my concern was that they would be blocked if I set that option. Setting up caller ID on a cell phone is a whole nother issue, and I could do include that in an additional show on that topic. It's not automatically done for you when you buy a cell phone. Sometimes the store that you buy that cell phone from will set it up for you, but many times, especially if you get your cell phone from a internet purchaser vendor kind of thing, you have to go in and set it yourself. The other option is obviously the do not call registry list, and anyone who has a phone number, whether it's a cell phone or a house phone, if you've signed up for the do not call registry, you know how ineffective it can be through no fault of the FTC or Federal Trade Commission. It's not their fault. Robo and spam callers don't always abide by the law. Many of them could care less. And the other side is political and charitable calls are exempt. And these days, holy smokes, the number of political calls, you know, political poll calls is unbelievable, right? And not just the political poll calls, but, you know, all the politicians are, you know, calling with their little spiels. But so those calls the do not call registry wouldn't work with. So what are the other tools? There are some devices that are available that go in between your phone line and your phone equipment that you can use to plug in specific numbers or, again, you know, options for a more global setting, you know, like the those calls that come up unavailable, don't have a caller ID. But an interesting tool that I found, and it's actually on the internet, it's called No More Robo. It's available at www.nomorobo.com, and it's actually pretty effective. It's an interesting story how the company got started. The FTC itself, recognizing that the Do Not Call registry was not blocking 100% all of those calls, they issued a challenge for someone to come up with a tool, and No More Robo won the contest. No More Robo is supported by most of the providers, Verizon, AT&T, Time Warner. They all have that service, and it has gotten some pretty good reviews. It's not without its bugs. Some people reported that all of their calls got blocked, so then they had to go in and, you know, tweak it a little bit to allow those calls to go through. But I wanted something that had more direct control that I specifically could control rather than leaving it to a service. So the old phone system that I had was from Panasonic, and it had the ability to block 30 numbers, but the call block save list was full, and so I needed more. I was tired of going in and deleting old ones and adding new. So I went back to the Panasonic website, and after some research, I found a new system that Panasonic had that had the ability to block 250 numbers. And the one that I chose for, actually Panasonic has quite a few of them that have that ability to block 250 numbers, but the one that I opted for is the Panasonic KX-TGF-37 series. Again, it's KX-TGF-37. It also has a link to cell Bluetooth, which is a registered trademark for Panasonic. It's a cordless phone and answering machine. Has the ability, the one that I got comes with up to, the one I got comes with 5 cordless handsets, but you can get it with 3 handsets, 4 handsets, 5 handsets, and ultimately it can handle a total of 6 separate cordless handsets. The call blocking itself is really easy in that each handset has a call block button on the bottom of the handset that you press when you want to block a number, and you can press it when a call comes in. If you're on a call, you know, if you answer it because you weren't sure what it was, and boy, those spam callers are really tricky these days, you know, with using area codes in your local area, so you never know if it's, you know, a friend or whoever it is. So if you're in the middle of a call, once you realize, hey, I don't I don't want to talk to this person. It's a robocall. You can press the call block button and save it instantly. You can save it after the fact if, you know, you get a come home and, you know, you've got a missed call and then you, you know, Google the phone number and find out it's a robocall. You can, you know, enter, you can hit call block then and save it to the list. So it's really, really easy to block calls. There's also an additional feature that you can kind of do that global blocking, again, with no number calls, anonymous calls, etc. So call blocking is really a peach with this thing. Not only is the call blocking feature really nice, and that was kind of my whole, you know, purpose of that, but the link to cell Bluetooth is also nice in that you can link two cell phones to the system using, again, the Bluetooth, and then you can use that phone system to answer cell phone calls. This is really handy if you have poor coverage or no coverage in different areas in your house, like the basement. We're lucky if we get a single bar in our basement. And with that link to cell, there's even an Android app. And if you have an Android cell phone, there's even an app that adds additional features, so it'll tell you if you get a text message. I haven't installed the Android app, and I don't think it allows you to send text messages using your house phone or handset that comes with the phone, but it will alert you if you have a text message. And that feature alone, that, you know, link to cell, even if you don't have a regular landline, a VoIP line, or even a POTS line, even if you don't have that, it's still worth looking at for that ability to link a couple of cell phones, you know, especially for the poor coverage. You don't have to carry your cell phone with you anymore. You can just leave it, you know, upstairs wherever, you know, or wherever your phone system is, and then have those handsets wherever you might need them, which is kind of nice. I already linked my cell phone to the system, and the other day I actually got a cell phone call, came over the, you know, regular phone handset, and worked like a charm. You couldn't even tell the difference. And yes, the phone system has even cut down on those spam calls as well. So it was worth the purchase. I think I purchased it from Amazon, and I want to say I got the 5 handset one. And I want to say it was about $160. And interesting, this is interesting, this had nothing to do with, you know, the topic, but I've done a couple of orders from Amazon lately. And since we've got the new distribution center in Kenosha, I don't know if anybody else has found this, but you can now get same-day service on an awful lot of stuff that Amazon carries. So that was also kind of cool. Okay, second device of the day, and this again was kind of a fun one. Regular listeners know that I am a huge gadget geek, and I'm always on the hunt for that perfect tablet. I've got, you know, quite a few already, and, you know, every time a new one comes up, you know, depending on, you know, the price point and what's going on, you know, I'm right there buying it. So my new tablet, it's not the perfect tablet, but it comes darn close, and it has become my go-to device. I've got an Amazon Fire. I mentioned that a few months ago, and I like my Amazon Fire, and, you know, some of the reasons why is because I'm heavily invested in the Amazon sphere, you know, and it works nicely with my Echo and all that kind of stuff. But I will admit the Fire was starting to annoy me. Again, don't get me wrong, it's a nice device, but Amazon has made it more challenging to download apps that are from the Google Play Store, but not on the Amazon Store. So it's definitely more difficult and sometimes downright impossible, unless you want to jump through a whole lot of hoops. Yes, you can make it happen, but it's not as easy as it used to be. So I decided to look for pure Android tablet. Didn't want to spend a whole lot for it. Okay, I confess that the only reason I wanted this is there was a game that I wanted to play that wasn't available on the fire through their store. So anyway, took a look around, and after I did a little bit of research, and again, keeping in mind, I did not want to spend a whole lot. I had, kind of a budget set. So I found this tablet. It's the Lenovo Tab 2 A8, meaning it's an 8-inch tablet, and it was $120. It's now, I looked this morning, and it's now down to $110, so it's even a better deal. For many, it's not going to be an answer for them, as it is a little underpowered. It's got a quad-core processor, but it's a little on the slow side, and it only has a gig of memory. The storage capacity is, 16 gig, and you can add a memory card for an additional 32 gig. But for me, it was perfect for what I wanted. Didn't need a gaming quality, except for my few silly Android games that I play. Screen is very nice. Movies are nice and clear. Speaker quality is also pretty decent. It's got two speakers on the front. A lot of the tablets only have a single speaker, and many times they're, on the back side or on the side, but these two are actually on the front, so it's supposed to simulate surround sound, pretty nice. Still not going to, substitute for your nice surround sound system, that's hooked up to your big screen, but hey, for on-the-fly movie watching, it's pretty good. Reading is great. I've got a number of reading apps, including, the Amazon app, and book reading is really nice. The touch works, pretty nice. And again, the couple of silly games that I play, like Candy Crush, work fine. First one I bought did have some issues. The Wi-Fi just plain didn't work. I'm pretty sure it was a hardware issue. But I exchanged it for a new one and worked fine. And like I said, it's my go-to device. I carry it with me all the time. So for $110, you can't go wrong. There are some that are, same kind of configuration and are a little cheaper. But I did want a solid brand, and Lenovo is actually pretty good quality. They are coming out with a Tab 3. Right now it's available in the 7-inch model for $70, and ultimately they're supposed to be bringing out an 8 and a 10-inch model in the future. These were shown at CES earlier this year, this spring, but I think they've still got some Tab 2 inventory to go through before they start doing the Tab 3 on the 8 and 10 inch model. And again, if you're looking for an inexpensive tablet, definitely check out that Lenovo. It's worth looking at. If you want something a bit more robust, there are other choices, and again, it's going to be at a higher price point. Samsung Galaxy is pretty nice, and there's others. And of course, if you really want, as my students would say, just get an iPad and have it done with. But for me, and what's nice now is that I've got an Android device, and I like to, play with all of the different OSs, and so that I can talk credibly about them all. So another topic, and this one is, it's actually fascinated me, and the more I dig into it, the more fascinated I become. So you all know that I'm an instructor here at Gateway, and I'm always trying to find ways to deliver a learning experience to my students other than boring textbooks. I have made a number of videos and using Camtasia, and so always trying to find that next way to do that. So recently I discovered, and this has actually been out for quite a while, I'm not sure how I missed it, but anyway, I discovered a couple of new tools from Microsoft, and I haven't had an opportunity yet to completely try them out, but I can't wait. The first one is called Mix. It's an add-on. It's free, by the way, to download. It works with PowerPoint. So if you've got Office and you've got PowerPoint, you can get this Mix for free. What it will allow you to do is incorporate easily incorporate interactivity, things like quizzes, you know, clickable quizzes into your PowerPoint. Microsoft actually calls it Office Mix. And if you Google Office Mix, there's a whole website dedicated to helping you use this. Includes examples that people have made, tutorials. It's really kind of neat. Some of the examples are fascinating. And what's kind of cool about Office Mix is you can create them and keep them locally on your computer as a file, or you can upload it to the Office Mix website, and then you can send your students out or whomever it might be. I don't want to keep thinking students, but you can send them out to your students. If you're a teacher and you use PowerPoints, it's definitely worth taking a look at. They've got another tool called Sway, and this one also looks interesting. Sway lets you incorporate all kinds of different content, things like presentations, videos, reports, anything basically, into a web-based product, and you don't need to know any HTML at all whatsoever. And then you can share these with, you know, friends. So if you want to make a personal website, if you want to, you know, make a website, you know, for, you know, to highlight a vacation or a wedding or whatever it might be. So you do this for, you know, share links with friends, families. If you want to use it for work purposes, you can do this for coworkers. And I know there are a number of sites out there that let you, you know, do a website, you know, with a drag and drop. There's Wix and Weebly are a couple of the more popular ones. And, you know, but this one kind of looks interesting. And what I truly found interesting about this whole thing is when you look at both Mix and Sway, there's a lot of links for teachers on both the Mix side and the Sway side, how you can use this in education. And it just kind of shows, looks like, you know, from appearances, it looks like Microsoft really wants to get into education. You know, Google is already there with the Google Classroom, and I know a lot of the K-12s use Google Classroom for, you know, delivering learning and for their students, and using it as a learning management system. And it's starting to look like Microsoft wants to do something very similar. They've always had a tremendous presence when it comes to training resources for their products. For example, Microsoft Virtual Academy, which, you know, is free, you know, all kinds of courses, you know, if you want to learn how to use, all the way from, you know, learning how to use Word and Excel, so Office products, all the way to programming, whole lot of different courses. But now it looks like they want to expand by helping teachers use all of these tools to create learning resources, whether it's, you know, again, a presentation to, you know, deliver a lesson, create lesson plans themselves. And there's even a couple of sites out there where, you know, they're talking about using different Microsoft products as a learning management system. One of them, which is kind of interesting, is using a product called SharePoint. And the reason that I found that interesting is Gateway just happens to have one of our IT programs is focuses on SharePoint. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. The challenge right now, at least from a consumer teacher educator perspective, is that if you start looking at all of this, it's really disjointed. You know, there's, you know, this site, and then there's that site, and, you know, it looks like there's, you know, it looks like, and this is just my perspective, it feels like there's like five different teams working on all of this. There's no cohesive structure. They're all kind of going in different directions, and, you know, there's nobody, you know, at the top of all of this giving any unification to it. Some of this may be just due to the nature of Microsoft. You know, they're very, very big into everything, you know, whether it's, you know, software, applications, operating systems, cloud, you know, the whole nine yards. Some of it may be because the management of education, it's not their core business. Yes, they've always, again, provided learning, so they've got experience in creating learning resources, but now trying to, you know, combine that into education at the, you know, K through 12 level or, you know, higher ed, it's not really their core business, you know. So it may be something that, you know, somebody had this idea, hey, you know, let's see how we can, you know, start getting into this and see what happens. Or it just may be somebody had this kind of cool idea. Whether or not it becomes anything, it'll be interesting to find out. As a Microsoft fangirl and a deliverer of IT instruction, much of it geared towards Microsoft products, I'm keeping my fingers crossed and we'll keep, you know, digging into this, and I hope that I can, you know, figure out a way to, you know, organize all of this into, you know, kind of a neat, understandable package for myself that I can use, you know, to help create things, you know, to help my students learn, and also, you know, share it with other teachers and educators in a way that's, you know, not too confusing. You know, it's disconcerting, you know, when you have, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 different links and trying to make sense of it all. There's some kind of neat stuff out there, though, and so if you are an educator, you know, no matter, again, K through 12, you know, higher ed, it's, you know, it's kind of interesting to, you know, to look at all of this different Microsoft in education resources that are out there. So as I learn more and as I, you know, kind of, you know, get it sort of figured out to where it's not this circular thing, I'll keep you all apprised of my progress and what I find out, because it's kind of interesting. Believe it or not, I even found Microsoft has got, you know, a lot of certifications, again, for their products. You know, they've got the certification for Office products, and then again, you know, for every, you know, Windows, their operating systems, networking, programming, all this. Well, there is even a certification exam for instructors using technology, and that one is, you know, kind of an interesting one because it's tied back to the ICT competency framework from UNESCO. Anybody that teaches using technology may be familiar with this. But anyway, it's the Microsoft Certified Educator, and it's geared to that competency. It's mapped to the 6 content areas, and the certification itself is it's 62-193, Technology Literacy for Educators, and basically it certifies that, or you have been certified to incorporate technology into teaching. You demonstrate an understanding of the technology literacy goals through that CFT framework. Again, the ICT resources for supporting curriculum outcomes using basic tools. Now, it doesn't test you on the tools themselves, but more how to apply those tools. Kind of an interesting thing to look at. So that's another one of those that I'm kind of delving into. So fun stuff from Microsoft. And again, I'll let you know as I continue to find out more and how to use those. So until next month, everybody have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Technology Matters with hosts Christine Lazzaro and Dave Snedeker.